Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
Hello and welcome to Alchemy 101, the show that explores all avenues of transformation and aims to offer some useful nuggets that can support us in living in line with nature in a way that's true to our nature, no matter how contrary that might seem, just like this nightingale, the bird that sings out in the dark. I'm JJ, the Practical Alchemist, and I'm delighted you could join me today. My guest today is a woman on a mission to spread her knowledge of the power of neuroscience. Laura Ellerer is an integrated success coach and a neuroscientist, but she's also a survivor. It wasn't so long ago that she almost ended her life. Instead, she learned to take control of her nervous system through understanding the science and practical implications of neuroscience. Now recovering from severe anxiety, depression, crippling imposter syndrome, suicidal tendencies and two mental breakdowns, Laura is determined to spread the word on how our nervous system impacts every aspect of our lives. She's known as the neuroscience knowledge sharer, and beyond the very difficult personal problems, her story is pretty colourful, as you'll hear. Laura, it's been quite the journey for you, and you've done so much. I'm quite envious looking at your life and your achievements, but it's been a real journey for you to get to where you are now. Tell us a little bit about your life and how you've come to this place now.
Gosh, yeah. I mean, it's been a bit of a roller coaster. Let's put it that way. There's been some certain highs and there's been some very, very crushing lows. But, I started out in the corporate world, as many do. I'm a chartered accountant by trade, but kind of lost love with that pretty early on in my career, let's say, and started looking for more, started doing loads of courses, and came across coaching. Actually, it was a friend that sort of said, oh, there's this free coaching thing in London. You know, go and have a look at that. So I found coaching in 2012 and was kind of like, wow, this is powerful. But the year after then boyfriend, now husband, was going to Afghanistan for a year. So I was like, right, well, if you're doing that, I'm going to go traveling because I don't want to be stuck at home on my own. So I decided to go traveling for a year, and I did my coaching diploma as I was traveling. So I went to, where did I get off? I went to India, where I went to an ashram and did meditation and yoga, which, given that I am the least bendy person in the world, I then did a bit of traveling around India, and then I went to Uganda next and taught in a school, which was amazing, absolutely amazing. Got a chance to travel around Uganda as well. Got charged by both a gorilla and a rhino, which is a story for another day.
Yeah. Not your everyday thing.
Not your everyday thing, but it was still pretty cool. I went to Botswana. And looked after lions in Botswana, traveled around South America in a tin can, basically, and lived at the bottom of Alp Duez and did lots of cycling and was training my coaching then. So that was kind of like how it all sort of began. Came back, started coaching, got engaged, got married, bought a house. So I had then my financial contracting business. And then I was made redundant from the role that I had in finance. And that's when I decided to go full time into coaching. So that was kind of how all the business end started. But it wasn't long after starting the coaching business that I found out I was pregnant. So I had two sons in fairly quick succession, 21 months apart.
Yeah.
And when my second son came along, it was absolutely brilliant at first. I then got very, very ill after 3 months. It was actually mastitis. It had me in the hospital. And the horror of that, of having my child taken away from me, of just that feeling of absolute hopelessness. Like I couldn't feed him because I was on so many drugs. And that sort of began the slippery slopes towards postnatal depression, which I was actually diagnosed with 2 days before my husband went back to Afghanistan again for 2 years.
Wow.
So
wow.
I was there with a 10-month-old and a 2-year-old, 2.5-year-old. And yeah, diagnosed literally 2 days before he left for Afghanistan, which was really, really, I mean, tough, isn't that doesn't quite cover the emotions. No. But me being me, I decided that there had to be a way that I could, you know, get my head down and work through this and push through. So I made the decision to do an Ironman, as you do. So
of course,
I started,
everybody does that, don't they?
Yeah. So in my spare time, quote unquote, I started training for an Ironman. So I set up the turbo in either my office, the shed in the garden, or in the kitchen at night when the boys were in bed. I bought a double running buggy and took them out on my runs with me. I trained and trained and trained. And 3 months after I decided to do it, actually did the Ironman. But to be honest, it didn't really help with the mental health. I had to call my husband home with 24 hours notice from Afghanistan one time because I was basically having a mental breakdown and,
wow.
and I needed somebody there. It must have been my mum, that my parents had come down and she saw me. She was like, you need to ring him. And they were so good. He was home within 24 hours. But did the Ironman, and I mean, running over the finishing line with my, what was he then, 13-month-old, had it been 14-month-old in my arms and my nearly 3-year-old running next to me was, the best. Like it still makes me feel that feeling inside. But obviously once that had all worn off and the excitement of and the sort of like concentration on that race, the focus had gone, the depression was still there. And although it sort of masked it quite well for a while, you know, we had COVID, that wasn't ideal. We had everything else that's happened since then, you know.
Yeah.
And it sort of came to a head. Well, my husband came home in end of 2020, and it was 2021 that things got really, really bad for me. So in loads of things happened in one go. It sort of seemed to be just like this perfect storm. And nobody ever really talks about how difficult it is when you've been away for 2 years and you come back together. And obviously my husband had been in a war zone. I'd been in my
Absolutely.
Own war zone here. Just
yeah.
a different sense of it. And you have to learn how to live together again. And it can be really tough. Add to that, my business wasn't going as well as I'd wanted it to. I'd just been laid off a contract that I had that had really affected kind of like my belief that women hate me. That's something that I've carried with me for a long time. And it just was all these different things. And it eventually ended up with me walking towards a weir one night with the full intention of throwing myself in it. Because I genuinely got to the place where I believed that everybody, my children included, were better off without me because I was just a waste of space. And that was summer 2021. And it was literally as I walked to the weir that I forced myself to sit down and just imagine my husband telling the kids that, you know, mummy wasn't coming home. And I told you this last week and I'm trying to do it without the lump in my throat.
No, well, so, of course you get a lump in your throat.
Yeah, I've told the story quite a few times now, but there's still obviously emotion there with it, but it's, I mean, hard not to, but the thought of my husband telling my kids that mummy's not coming home. And then the realization when they were, you know, a bit older and they realized that I'm really conscious of saying that I chose to, because it's not a choice, but they perceived choice of leaving them. That really made me rethink. And I was like, right, this is, I can't do this. I can't do this, but I also can't do what I've been doing. So it was a friend that pushed me into going and seeing the doctor who I'd not seen for a long time. And she was like, yeah, this is bad. You need to go see a doctor.
Mm.
So went to the doctor's. Actually, it was a phone call because it was still sort of post-COVID time. And the doctor was amazing. He was on the phone from, it must have been 30, 40 minutes. He was absolutely amazing. I mean, given you normally get, is it 5 minutes? Or I don't know how long an appointment was. And I spent the whole time going, you need to be with somebody that really needs you. Like, I'm still going, I'm not that bad.
You're still not believing that you actually deserve it.
I don't want to take up your time. I'm sorry. And he wanted to put me on Depressants, not antibiotics, antidepressants. And whilst I'm really not against taking antidepressants, and I think that they have their place and they're really important, I just wanted to try another way. I was just like, please give me another way. Like, can we do therapy? You know, when I'd had postnatal depression, I'd had CBT, so I was like, can I do therapy? And the doctor says, you're too far gone for that. You need to take antidepressants because the therapy won't work at this stage, which was obviously a little bit of a blow to hear.
Yeah.
And in the end, I just begged him to give me 30 days. I was just like, just give me 30 days. If in 30 days I'm not better, then I'll take the antidepressants. But give me 30 days, which thankfully he agreed to. And so I just set to, and I basically stopped working pretty much. I still was doing a course, so I was still running this course, but I stopped having to be on social media all the time, which was obviously has its own pressures. I stopped trying to do and be all the things. And I just basically went into this cocoon. I just went inwards and I spent time meditating. I doubled down on everything that I knew and everything that I taught. But, you know, knowing something is one thing and doing it is another thing. And when you get busy and rushed and stressed, those things tend to go out the window. So I stopped drinking because alcohol had been sort of like my best friend through most of that and my worst enemy. I eventually gave up coffee and alcohol, although I still will drink wine now, but it's very much, very much more limited and I'm much more consciously consuming it. I started exercising more. I did loads of like self-help therapy. And after 30 days, he literally couldn't believe I was the same person. Mm. He's like, I want to know what you did. Like, I want to know what you did so I could do it with other people. And it was in that time that I was like, right, I want to know the science behind what I was doing, because I knew it was important to calm my nervous system. I knew I was in threat mode. I knew I was constantly in this fight or flight mode. I was literally just surviving. I was totally in survival mode. And it had been all about calming down my nervous system. Like, what can I do to calm my nervous system down? What can I do to calm my brain chatter down? What can I do to just bring me back down and ground myself? And I was like, I want to understand the science behind this.
Yeah.
Because my background's in science. And that's when I signed up to do a master's in neuroscience. So it's actually neuroscience and psychology. And that was 2021. And so I'm still doing the master's. I'm doing it part-time. I mean, I've still got two kids and two businesses, so it's a part-time thing. And it was only when I was talking about the stuff I was learning that some coaches that I knew were like, well, can you teach us? I was like, well, yes. And from that came the diploma. So we now teach coaches, a diploma in neuroscience for coaches. And then I've had other people saying, well, we're not coaches. Can you teach us like the wellness side of it? And I was like, okay, I can do that.
Yeah.
So then that came about the other course, which I'm currently writing. So, I mean, that's in a nutshell what's been going on for the last, well, I guess, few years. But it's, it's been a roller coaster.
Yes. You've been and done and seen a lot, and you've come out the other end of it now. A couple of things came to my mind as you were telling us your story. One is that you did the Ironman, but it didn't really help you. It's so interesting because a lot of people have found that doing that kind of intense challenge has really helped them, but it didn't for you. And it just sort of kind of reminds me that we're all different. You know, we don't all respond to the same challenges.
And I think it's almost masking it with endorphins. And I think the problem was, is after I did it, I stopped. So maybe if I'd carried on training loads, but by that point I was so done with training. I was so done with clock watching and timing myself and the stress that was adding. So I think it was more like it was masking it with the endorphin rush and the focus of having something really to focus on. And to an extent, I think that does help some people. I think you're right, everybody's different. But it's almost like, for me, it was almost like a sticky plaster to just get by.
Yes.
And once I got that sticky plaster off, the problems were still there. The thoughts were still there. My nervous system was still shot. In fact, it was probably worse.
Yeah.
It was probably worse after.
Yeah.
Because of the adrenaline and everything that had been pumped through it. And so for me, it was definitely more of a coping mechanism that then obviously when it wasn't there anymore, I slipped back down into the depression.
Yes. And that's what I find so interesting. And I think it's great for people to hear, you know, on the positive side, know that, you know, sometimes these things don't work, but that's not a bad thing, right?
No,
you just have to find the thing that will work for you. And luckily you did that. And the other thing I was thinking, you know, you talk about, and your website says you don't, you know, it took you 7 years, I think, that you say on your website.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have to take you 7 years to get to where you need to be.
No.
You can get there a lot quicker, because obviously in your case, it was a bit of a trial and error in some respects. Absolutely, and yeah. You were looking for something to help you, but you weren't finding it. And it took you all that time to find it. But of course, people having listened to you now can say, oh, okay, I just need to go straight to the source and that might help me.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, like you say, though, things are different for everybody. So not one size doesn't fit all. But I think I did do a lot of trial and error. I definitely did a lot of that. I wasted a lot of time. Wasting a lot of time. I learned a lot on the journey.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the path is never A to B, is it? It's A,
never.
Up, down, around and back a bit. And
yeah.
And I think it's easy to say, oh, well, you could just go and learn from that person. It's still A to B and you'll learn A to B. Nobody's journey is like that. You're still going to have to go around the houses. But I think you can get people who have been through it who can show you a different path. Because sometimes we're so stuck in our ways. We've so got the blinkers on that this is what we're doing. This is the right path. This is where I should be. That we can't see the alternatives. And if we don't pay attention to something, we're not aware of it. So I think what other people in your journey can do is they can open up your attention to other things. And then once you place awareness, attention on those other things, you can become aware that there's other routes. But I've had my finance business for 10 years. I've had my coaching business now for nearly 8 years, I think it is now coming up to. And I'm only now starting to really see the success in the coaching business, that coaching and neuroscience business now as it is, that I kind of wanted all that time ago. And I spent years berating myself for missing the boat. You know, I saw what was going on in like the coaching world years and years and years ago. And I was sort of initially on that first wave. And then I stepped back and had children and all the rest of it. And it was quite hard to then come back and be like, wow, well, all those people that were there with me are now like up here, like they're the top guys in the industry. But I think it's also knowing that, you know, you never miss a boat that was meant for you.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're always in the right place. But I think we've all got our different stories that we have to overcome in order to get to that happy ground.
Exactly. And Laura now has a wealth of experience that those other people don't have. Well, hold that thought for now, because it's time to take a short break. We'll be back with more on that from Laura Ellerer after this from our station sponsors.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Alchemy 101 here on UK Health Radio with me, JJ, the practical alchemist, and my guest, the psychology and neuroscience expert, Laura Ellerer. And we carry on reflecting on how Laura's path differed quite markedly from her contemporaries.
You know, it's too easy to look at others and say, oh, I could have been there if I'd only done.
Yeah, X, Y, Z.
Yeah.
Shoulda, woulda, coulda.
Shoulda, woulda, coulda. Yeah, exactly. Let go of the hat.
Yeah.
And know that where you are now is exactly where you're supposed to be.
And I certainly wouldn't have been here had I taken that path.
No.
This feels a lot better than I think that one would have.
Yeah. So it's what you needed to do, which is fantastic. And it's fantastic that now you can help other people find their path.
Yeah.
And find out what it is that they can do. But also with that added element of neuroscience and understanding the way our brains work or don't work, yeah, or work against us.
Yeah.
So talk to me a little bit about the neuroscience here. Tell me how that actually comes into how you got through all this stuff. Because, I mean, when I think about it, you know, two young children, you know, separation from partner, wars, travel, business, redundancy. I mean, please.
Released a podcast as well.
Yeah, you did. And an award-winning podcast, I understand. Yeah.
I'm not doing it at the moment, but yeah.
It's, yeah. So, you know, heavens, you were doing so much in some sense. Unless you're really on it, unless you're really together, it's no wonder.
Yeah, you're not the first person that said that to me, I've got to say. Yeah, I guess I think I've always been that way inclined. Like if there's a minute in the day, I'll fill it. Like there'll be, yeah, something there. And I think there's definitely still work to be done on that. Because what is it that you're running from, I think, is the question. Like, why can't you sit still with yourself? And I think a lot of what I learned over the last few years is being able to sit with myself and feel the emotions and feel good and go through the stories and, yeah, and all the rest of it. But I guess from going back to your question from the neuroscience perspective, I mean, neuroscience is everything to do with our nervous system. I mean, neuroscience is the study of the nervous system.
Yes.
So obviously when I was in this heightened state and I was constantly reacting to things, I was finding I was really reactive towards my children because I was in such a heightened state that it took one thing and I'd gone. So just understanding what's actually going on in our bodies, like how, you know, the different hormones are going through our bodies and it's causing our heart rate to increase and it's causing our breathing to increase. It's causing it means our immune system's not working, which is why I was getting ill. It means that, you know, your digestive system's not working, which is why I was putting weight on. It was all these things that it was more retrospective. It was more, yeah, retrospective. I was learning the information after it happened and being like, so that's why. Ah, so that's why. And knowing how stress affects our brain, knowing how it affects our cells. No, I mean, like, it literally, stress is, if you want to succeed, the thing you have to be aware of is how stress is the kryptonite of success. And I think that's been my biggest aha moment, is that I thought that, you know, being stressed went hand in hand with just being busy and efficient and getting things done. And like, even the Iron Man was a bit like that.
Yeah.
And actually what I realized was stress was absolutely the opposite of that, and that was the thing that was causing the biggest problems, because your brain doesn't work properly when you're stressed at all. You can't connect with other people when you're stressed, which is what you need. You can't communicate properly, you can't think logically, you can't think creatively, all these things which affects us when we're stressed. So whether that was in my business or in my home life, it literally seeps into every pore. So I think the neuroscience has really helped sort of understand and be able to look backwards, and not just from the actual masters I'm doing in it, but just being able to understand how to read the papers and then going off and doing my own research and finding out, especially for the diploma, that was going and finding, doing my research and finding out what was going on. And as I was writing the diploma, everything came back to stress, everything. And I know part of that's probably because I was looking for it. I get that as well. But it just naturally came back to the fact that if you are stressed out, if you're in heightened state, if you're worried, anxious, then you're going to have all these side effects. And it's, I mean, it literally leads to early death. It's the silent killer. So,
yeah. And would you agree? I mean, a lot of people say that some stress is good because it motivates you, but it's the cumulative effect of ongoing stress that is, you know, the killer. And we need to rest. So maybe you weren't finding the space with everything that was going on in your life to find that rest that you needed.
No. And, yeah, I mean, at the time, especially at the Ironman, I was sleeping for about 3 hours on an average a night because of the kids. Because they were still young. I mean, one was still breastfeeding. The other one was still very young. And both my kids were literally terrible sleepers. So at that point, there was no sleep. And then the stress of everything that was going on, the next sort of round as it came round, was meaning I wasn't sleeping very well. I mean, sleep is so important for us. Like 99% of adults need 7 to 9 hours sleep a night. And we just don't get it. We just don't. I mean, I'm desperately trying to do 8 hours sleep. And even even though I know the effects of not sleeping, I still go, it's the first one to go out the door when there's something, there's a deadline. I'll go to bed a bit later. I'll get up a bit earlier.
Yeah, but no, absolutely. And you know, your language is saying it all that I'm desperately trying. You know,
yeah, desperately in other words, trying. Not you know quite, I'm not going to do it.
Yeah, not quite getting there. Yeah. And it's interesting talking about sleep because I've had to take myself in hand, as it were, and say, okay, you don't do that because you're not going to get enough sleep if you do that.
Yeah.
So I've been shifting the way I work, you know, shifting the way I kind of live and organize my life so that I can get, even if I'm working till late, I can get those hours in, because there was a while at the end of last year that I just wasn't getting enough sleep at all. And it was really wrecking me.
Yeah.
I was exhausted all the time.
I mean, it is torture. It's used as a form of torture. And obviously there's parts of your life where it's less easy. So, you know, if you've got children that aren't sleeping.
Obviously,
But, I mean, even if you lose an hour a night, you do that two nights in a row, you lose a lot of function of the brain. Like, it's like, they say that if you're driving when you're tired, it's like driving when you're under the influence of alcohol. Because your brain needs that time to rest and recoup.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you know, you're not going to be performing to your best at all if you're tired.
Yeah. But of course, you know, I was thinking last night, for instance, I went out, I was at a little bit of a party, which was lovely. I didn't get back home till midnight. And of course, you know, there were a few things I needed to do. So I probably didn't get to sleep till about 1 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
I allowed myself to sleep. I didn't set my alarm.
Oh, nice.
I knew that I didn't
I don't know what that feels like.
Oh,
Only because of the kids, because they're my alarm.
Exactly. So didn't set my alarm. The way I work, I'm lucky enough not to have to get up and get to a job at a certain time.
Yeah.
So didn't set my alarm and I woke up at 8:30. So I've got my 7.5 hours sleep.
Yeah. But that's important.
Yeah, it is important. So, but otherwise, you know, I might have been getting up at 7 o'clock and then it's like 6 hours. That's not enough.
No, absolutely not. But most people live on about that amount. That's sort of the average. And if you think how that's affecting your body night in, night out, every single night. And then we do like a really long night lying, you know, if you don't have young children like me, have a lying at the weekend because to catch up. And it doesn't really work like that. Like you need that period of time where you're sleeping. And I mean, yeah, napping the day will make it, will help a little bit. But if you're not getting that full time in one slot, it's not having the same benefits.
Yeah, no, and I did find that I was having a nap in the afternoon sometimes because I was just so exhausted. But you're right, it's not the same as getting a straight 7 or 8 hours sleep through the night. Yeah.
I feel rubbish if I nap as well. My husband loves napping. I can't stand it.
Oh, can't you?
No.
See, there's another thing, you know.
I feel horrendous if I nap in the day.
Yeah. Some of us love it. Some of us don't.
No.
I don't need it at the moment because I am getting my sleep. Yeah. But, and so I'm not finding that I do nap in the afternoon these days, but I quite enjoy it when I do it. I kind of wake up a little bit more refreshed and can get on with the rest of the day. But you see, we're all different. We're all so different.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. And so we're talking about neuroscience and how our nervous system affects us. And of course, one of the things that I think you mentioned was that you started doing meditation, that sort of thing. So there are practices that we can do, like meditation, like just sitting and being quiet in silence. There's a technique called havening, which I don't know if you know much about, it's catching on quite well now. It's a lovely way of just calming the nervous system.
Ooh,
and it's very simple. Look into that. Well, I'm not trained in it, but I've experienced it. And in fact, people have been telling me that I should train in it. You should do it. You should do it. But it is a lovely, very simple way of just touching the body, and you can do it to yourself and it just calms you down, calms the nervous system. It's gorgeous. So there are many things that we can do. So, you know, it's fascinating, isn't it, how much more enabled we are, how much much more resourceful we are when our nervous system has been calmed down. Like you said, when you're in fight or flight, constantly, that's all you're thinking about.
That, and I mean, the other side of it is when people aren't in fight or flight, they're actually dissociated. So I guess there's two sort of sides to it. And one is the one that I was in, which was like the survival mode, like, you know, just really heightened sense of, I've got to get out of here, I've got to fight.
Yeah.
But some people go the other end of the spectrum and they completely dissociate from themselves and from their bodies and from what's going on. So it's like where somebody's in the room, like physically there, but then they're not there mentally. So there's just no real good aspects to stress. And actually, that's reminding me of what you were saying about before, that, you know, do I think that a bit of stress is helpful?
Mm.
Why would you choose stress over motivation? And, you know, stress is a concept.
Yeah.
Stress is a concept. It's a human concept. It's, you know, we have all this feeling, these senses coming up from our body, electrical communication into our brain, and our brain goes, right, what is this? And at some point somebody said to you, when you felt like that, oh, don't be stressed, don't feel stressed, and you go, oh, so this is stress. So the next time you get all those senses coming up from your body, you go, oh, this must be stress. Now the thing about that is that stress in different situations, you can have exactly the same feelings, but you'd call it something completely different.
Oh, that's so interesting.
If you're sat in a doctor's surgery waiting for results and you get a feeling, it comes up in you that would be felt probably like dread. Those same sensations when you're sat waiting for a date to come in the room might be anticipation, excitement. You might get exactly those same feelings on, you know, I don't know, a roller coaster, and you call it fear, but it's nice fear. But it's it's how we construct that emotion based on the senses that come into us, because our brain is literally locked in a box. It doesn't see what's going on. It gets electrical zaps. I mean, it's a bit cruel, really. We stick it in a box, which is our skull, in the dark, and we keep sending it little zaps, and we've got to work out what that means. And we work out what that means based on what's happened in the past.
Mm.
So we're always predicting. So is stress good for you? Well, I guess it depends on the story you attach to it.
Yeah. Oh, that's so interesting. Yeah, I can totally see that. And so therefore, when we talk about changing our story and changing our associations with things and feelings, that's when we can get immediate relief and immediate turnaround in our life. Yeah.
Yeah, because you just change the story to the feelings that are coming in.
Yeah. Yeah, I've never really had it explained to me that way before, which is interesting. So then when you're working with somebody, if you're working with somebody as a coach, do you employ these techniques to help people change that story and change that association?
Yeah, I'm trained in hypnotherapy. So I use some hypnotherapy if somebody's really stressed out, or if it's like chronic pain or something like that. Then I mean, what hypnotherapy does is it relaxes you, right? It helps you breathe deeper. It helps you relax, which is exactly what calming our nervous system is. So either using the knowledge to explain it, depending on the person and what they need in that moment. I mean, if you've got somebody that's really stressed out and freaking out about life, they probably don't want a science lesson, depending on their background. But some people find comfort in that. I found comfort in the knowledge. Like, I found comfort that there was science backing it up, that it wasn't just me. You know, like, it's not just me. It's not, I'm not broken. You know, there is science behind this. So, yeah, so it depends on the person. It depends completely on the situation. But absolutely, I've explained things like, you know, how our brain predicts. And if you want tomorrow to be different, you've got to change today, because that's what our brain does. So it can't deal with all the pieces of information coming in all the time. So what it does is it goes, oh, this looks like something I've seen before, this is how I'm going to react.
Yeah.
So that's really helpful, especially from a coaching perspective. If somebody's wanting change, but they're living with these stories and all the rest of it, it's also a massive thing for when we come on to talk about beliefs, because our beliefs can literally kill us. Literally, I mean, there's a study that I often quote because I love it, but they took one group of elderly people who thought that they were, you know, really old, they were going to die soon, they thought they were ill, they thought, you know, basically they were like, oh, you know, we're at the end of our lives. The people that sort of talk about it quite a lot. And they took another group of elderly people who thought that they were healthy, they were thriving, they were going to be fine, and, you know, they're going to live long life. And they found that regardless of their actual health status, so regardless of the actual illnesses they had, the people that believed they were going to die young did. And that's just one example in many that I found as I've been researching, that just shows how powerful our beliefs are.
Oh, they're so hugely, yeah. Hugely
if somebody's coming to me and you know, we just really can't get through their belief system, sharing an example like that can almost jolt somebody into being like, oh, like, I need to do something about this. I don't want to die early. So very much depends on the situation, but absolutely the knowledge helps. And I think that tends to be more on my like training courses as opposed to my one-on-one coaching.
And of course, you can change beliefs, but more on that after we take another short break. Back right after this from our station sponsors.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Alchemy 101 here on UK Health Radio and the UK Health Radio podcast with me, JJ, the Practical Alchemist, and my guest today, Laura Ellerer, the neuroscience knowledge sharer. Now, just before the break, we were talking about the power of belief, but we don't have to be stuck with our beliefs. So many of them, of course, are limiting beliefs that keep us from achieving our potential. And during my own training in neurolinguistic programming, I learned for myself how we can change beliefs within a matter of minutes, maybe around 10 minutes in a very elegant process designed by Robert Diltz, one of the leaders in the field.
We literally can change our beliefs like that.
Yeah.
The problem is that we hold so many stories attached to them, and we hold so much of who we are, our identity.
Yeah.
We have, you know, that second sort of benefit, what the secondary benefit from it as well. So there's always something there. Even if we're like, oh no, I don't gain anything from this belief. I gain nothing from this belief. Somewhere deep down we do, otherwise we wouldn't stop the belief. Because you have a belief if you keep repeating it, and you'd only keep repeating it if it was useful to you. And from an evolutionary perspective, that would be if it meant that you could survive. So somewhere along the way, that belief has kept you safe. It's just now it's hurting you.
Absolutely.
So we've got to change those neural pathways. That's the problem.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, the reason why it might take you about 10 minutes with Robert's process is because he does go through different levels of, you know, where you store these beliefs, as a sort of a hierarchy of values and, you know, where you have these beliefs. So you go through those just to make sure you hit every point.
Just so there's nothing left. I was going to say, I've said it quite flippantly, like, oh, you can change your beliefs like that. I know it's more difficult than that.
Yeah.
If it wasn't, it wouldn't have taken me 7 years.
No, correct. Exactly.
So I know I'm saying, I mean, technically you can, but obviously we're humans and we have emotions and we have stories and we have everything else. So that's why it's not in reality as simple as that, but technically it could be.
Yeah. And isn't it fascinating? And going back to health as an example, isn't it fascinating that if you believe that you are going to get something, die from something, you will. But if you believe that you are absolutely impervious to anything that's going to get you, you won't get it. You know, I mean, obviously, I haven't seen sort of, you know, statistics on this belief. But
I mean,
anecdotally, what I see,
there's more that we can do with our belief than we think. It's not everything, obviously. It's not like that. It's not 100%. You know, people that have an illness, it was their belief system. I don't mean that in the slightest.
No,
but we do have much more power with our belief than we think, and even to the point where I think it's Kelly McGonigal in her, she talks about where. Let me get this the right way around. people that are stressed and believe that the stress is bad for them, it actually has a really bad detrimental effect on their heart because of the way that their blood vessels constrict.
Yeah.
People that are under stress and they believe it's good for them and it's powering them on and you know, taking them places, they have the same effect, but their blood vessels stay open and it basically has the same effect of having like exercise. So the blood pressure increases, but the heart rate increases, but it pumps more blood around the body. So that belief in itself changes the result of stress.
Absolutely.
So whereas I just said stress is bad for you, which probably hasn't helped.
I was going to say, and it takes us back to this what we were talking about earlier about is stress bad for you or is it good for you, as some people say. But it's obviously the people who believe it is good for you and actually get a benefit from that.
Yeah,
it's so fascinating, isn't it? And you know, personally, I keep saying to people, I'm a member of the 100 plus club. I intend to live to beyond 100.
Oh, I'm 109. I've already said it.
Oh, have you said 109?
Yeah, okay. I'm going with 109.
I haven't been specific, but certainly
need to be specific.
No, do I need to be specific? Yeah. Okay, well, I'll work on that one and see how far I really want to go. But it's not, you know, it's not out with the my experience, because where I live, and my parents lived well into their 90s. Where I live, there are, you know, a few people who lived until 100 and something, 105, 106, you know. So I've personal experience of that. So therefore, it's easier for me to hold that belief.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, if you were surrounded by everybody who died, I mean, if we were here, like, you know, 100, 200 years ago, life expectancy is what? 40 years, something like that.
Yeah.
If there was somebody then saying, I'm going to live till 100, the belief level would be fairly low because there's no evidence.
It'd be kind of stretching it, wouldn't it? It'd be really stretching it to feel your way or kind of think your way into that in any way. Yeah,
exactly. And I think we, that kind of helps us as well when we think about setting goals or trying to do something in our lives, that we need to be looking for the evidence for our goals. We need to be looking for the evidence for our beliefs because that really helps to sort of solidify that is possible. And again, it goes back to that prediction thing that, you know, if you've seen it happen and your brain's taken on that's going to happen, then you're more likely to go forward with the belief that's going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. And the example that we were always given was the 4-minute mile when nobody believed that anybody could run 100%. A mile in 4 minutes. Yeah. Until Rogers Bannister did it.
And then everybody did it. Well, not everybody. Not everybody. I've tried. No, I haven't.
Yeah, not everybody did it, but loads of people did it.
Absolutely. What does that show you?
Yeah. So there was no belief before. Yeah. But as soon as somebody proved that it was possible, a whole bunch of people went out and did it.
Because that just shows that their bodies were willing, but their brain was stopping them. Their mind was stopping them. And once their mind got the okay, once there was evidence, once they'd seen it happened and they could predict that was something that could happen, then their brain got on board with their body and they could do it. Because it's always your brain that gives in first. If it's not, that's when you collapse and when, you know, and that happens quite a lot with, I guess, like people are trained in the army and things like
In
the military, where they're trained to almost turn their brain off. But it does show you, doesn't it, just how powerful belief is.
It really is. And, you know, just talking about training and army training, and I was thinking back to my younger days when I used to do a lot of fell walking. And I did the Like Wake walk across the North Yorkshire Moors. And I think it's 43 miles and you get a coffin badge at the end of it if you do it within 24 hours.
No, I should know that, given I'm from Leeds, but I don't know that one.
Oh, it's from Osmotherley to Ravenscar.
Oh, I've not heard of that one. Okay.
And it's 43 miles over the North Yorkshire Moors. And you have to do it within, well, I mean, I assume people are still doing it. I did it in my 20s. That was a long time ago. But 43 miles over the moors and within 24 hours. So you had to finish it within that time. I think I did it in 22 hours or something.
That's tough, over the moors.
And had a sleep in the middle. I had a quick sleep in the middle. quick nap in a tent. But it was fascinating, I found, that a couple of people gave up and said, I can't do this. Mm. But that's when I realized that kind of endurance test is all to do with the mind and 100%. Very little to do with the body.
Yeah, absolutely.
You just have to believe you can finish it and then you do.
Yeah, I 100%. I mean, that when I was training for the Ironman, you're not meant to go out and do the full distance on the bike beforehand. Like, that's not part of the training plan. You it's a bit like doing a marathon. You don't normally run a marathon before you run a marathon.
No.
I had to. My husband's like, why are you doing this? I was like, because I need to prove to myself that I can physically do it. I need to prove that I can do that. And I did. I went out and trained and I did it. And God, it was horrible on my own. It was horrible.
I bet.
But I did it. And that meant when I came to race day, I was like, I can do this.
Yeah. You see, that's really interesting, isn't it? And so there will be some people who get to race day and they haven't proved to themselves that they'll have that doubt.
I did it in 2014 and I ended up drowning in the swim and having to be rescued.
There you go.
Sea swim. It wasn't very fun. And I don't think my head was fully in the game. I mean, yeah. Okay, the conditions were terrible. But I didn't have the same belief then. It was panic going into it. Like, oh my God, I've almost ruined it was 2 weeks after my wedding. So I was like, I've nearly ruined my wedding for this.
Oh my gosh.
You know, what if I don't? And yeah, I didn't get very far that time, which is why I had to come back and do it, obviously, again.
Obviously, you had to prove to yourself that you can do it. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. And so isn't that fascinating? The power of our brain in terms of our health and well-being, as well as, you know, everything in life, is so important. And it's so important for us to understand how that connects with our body and how that impacts our entire life, not just in terms of wellness.
No, absolutely, it impacts absolutely everything we do. I mean, we are nothing without our brains. We literally, they can't replace the brain. Maybe someday they could, but you know, without a brain, you are literally nothing, and your brain impacts everything that you do.
Yeah,
your brain and the rest of your nervous system, anyway.
It's a hugely complicated organ, isn't it?
Massively. I mean, we're still decades out from being able to understand it fully.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, far less replicated.
And there's new findings literally every day. Most sort of talk about something one day and then the next day that's proven wrong, and then that counter, it's just constant. But that's why I find it really fascinating.
Well, it is fascinating, and it's been fascinating talking with you about it.
Lovely talking to you.
And I've really enjoyed our conversation. I think it's great, and I think, you know, the message that the neuroscience is really important, and to, you don't have to understand it, but you know, just realize that it's not all to do with your physicality. It's not all to do with your physical body. There's a very large, well, I suppose the neural system is physical, but then on top of that, you've got the, you know, the beliefs and the thoughts and everything
and
else.
And I'm a massive advocate for bringing it back to that, because I think mental health has quite a stigma attached to it, but actually mental health is your brain health. And I think when you start saying brain health, and it's Dr. Eamon talks a lot about this as well. But when you talk about brain health, suddenly it becomes reality. Like you can picture a brain.
Yes.
And, you know, my brain's damaged is a little bit like my heart's damaged, which is, or my arm's damaged, which seems to remove that stigma. So I'm very much about bringing it back into being a physical thing.
Well, and I think that's great. It's so fantastic. And now, if anybody wants to find out more about what you do, maybe, you know, ask you for coaching, and because you do a kind of success coaching as well, where can people find you? So you've got a website, which is actually lovely. I was looking at your website earlier, and I love it. It's really playful, which I enjoy.
Thank you. It's the first time I've had a website and not wanted to change it straight away.
Well, I think it's great. I don't think you need to change it. So tell us where that is and how people can find you.
Yeah, sure. So my website is lauraellera.com. And I'm on Instagram. I am Laura Ellera, and Facebook, Laura Marie Ellera.
Lovely, lovely. And people can contact you that way. That's no problem at all. No, Laura, thank you so much. In some ways, I'm rather envious of all the things that you've done, like, you know, working with lions and, you know, that being in Africa. I mean, I love Africa. I'm a big Africanist. Yeah. So, you know, and I love Botswana, which is where you were as well. And I had one of my peak experiences on the Chobe River in Botswana with elephants playing in the water all around us. So gorgeous. So, on the one hand, I'm kind of envious of your experiences there and being a bit of a travel bug myself. But on the other hand, wow. You know, you've had it, you've had some tough times. And so kudos to you for getting through them and for now helping other people get through those times themselves. So for everything that you do, Laura, and for being on the show today, thank you so, so much.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Laura Ellera there. I do love to hear from people who've transformed their lives by working in a natural way with their bodies and minds and who are doing such great work helping others to do the same. Once again, there's no one size fits all when it comes to good health, but understanding how our system works can help us find the support that's best for our needs. And now, sadly, we're at the end of the show. If you're listening to the podcast version of this show and you like what you hear, do subscribe and share this episode, and even better, do leave a review too. If you'd like more great health news and features, why not subscribe to our sister publication, Health Triangle Magazine? You'll find out how at ukhealthradio.com/magazine. Also, remember to check out the show I co-host with Dr. Mark Goulston here on UK Health Radio. It's called Hurt Less, Live More, and it's a place for raw, uplifting and hopefully enlightening conversations with fantastic guests. So I hope you'll join me again soon here on UK Health Radio. But for now, it's goodbye from me and that nightingale.